Blog Talk Radio.
It's September 24th, 2017. Hello and welcome to Working for a Living Radio Show, where progressives for change present opinions that matter. Tonight we're joined by co-hosts Jeff Brown and David Fillion. I'm your moderator, Leroy McKnight. Please remember that good leadership is never about power and control, but rather for the honor and the privilege of serving the members in the interest of the membership. To be sure, each and every member of the leadership team of Working for a Living is committed to returning our union, the UAW, to a labor ethos, and that ethos then administered in the interests of all the rank and file members. Having said that, we certainly hope that everyone had an enjoyable weekend and that you had a lot of fun and stayed safe. Announcements. The first announcement is GM workers at the GM Cami assembly plant in Ontario are on strike. Team Working for a Living fully supports Unifor Local 88 in their efforts. We should have more on that later in our show. I think you'll find this an interesting show tonight, brothers and sisters, other listeners. Announcement two, please take note of the Local Union 88 strike assistance post on Facebook. We'll have a little more on that as well in the email section. Announcement number three, remember that Team Working for a Living supports Medicare for Everyone and removing the cap of $127,000 on earnings that are subject to participation in the Social Security program. A reminder that there is a petition on our page to sign in support of Medicare for All. Obviously, you can call your senator and legislators, House representatives from your area and encourage them to support it as well. Announcement number four, Team Working for a Living continues to oppose the Working Families Flexibility Act. Number five, Team Working for a Living continues to stand shoulder to shoulder with the Michigan building trades against the legislation introduced to repeal Michigan's prevailing wage. They have renewed their request to decline to sign any petition you are presented with anything that has to do with a prevailing wage. Announcement number six, as a reminder that Unifor, the Labor Union of Canada, has asked that the right-to-work rules be abolished as a condition of NAFTA renegotiations. Announcement seven, remember there's a reminder that there's no offer on the table for FCA at this time. Announcement eight, Kia suspends daily scheduled overtime of all of its Korean plants in response to a court ruling that it must include bonuses and lunch allowances in calculating regular wages. Announcement number nine, GM Korea, meanwhile, is hit by partial strikes that are playing havoc with the automaker's production schedules. Announcement number 10, General Motors is laying off more than 250 employees in Canada, where about 2,800 unionized auto workers have been on strike since late Sunday last week. Announcement number 11, the two Lordstown locals are merging. UAW Local 1714 will be absorbed into UAW Local 1112. Please watch for meeting times where details will be provided for you. Announcement number 12, GM is going to furlough shift operations at its Spring Hill facility. The effective date is expected to be after the Thanksgiving weekend. More to follow. It's still in its formulation of all of what's going on down there and how the other two shifts are going to be affected. Announcement number 13, President of the United States has nominated Attorney Peter Robb to serve as General Counsel for the National Labor Relations Board. It is worthy of note that Attorney Robb was President Reagan's lead attorney that led to the union busting of the Air Traffic Controllers Union. All one can say is he's back. Announcement number 14, Governor Snyder, Republican of Michigan, has signed into law that allows candidates to raise unlimited funds through super PACs. Announcement 15, the Michigan Civil Service Commission has voted to place new limits on union bargaining. Representative Tim Grimmel, Democrat from Auburn Hills, said the rule leaves state employees with collective bargaining rights in name only. Announcement number 16, the feds have disclosed that UAW and FCA execs laundered money through a fake hospice center. Okay, we have some email here, so we'll get to the first one. Jeff and David did a good job when Leroy was having mic issues. That was from Pennsylvania. They do a good job all the time. You just don't see it from Pennsylvania. Announcement number 2, hey, Jeff, looking forward to this week's Constitution series. That's from Texas. He's doing a nice job on that. And, of course, everybody's supporting him in his effort to do that. Announcement 3, they raised union dues to support strikers. Why are we being asked to help these strikers? From Missouri. Well, brother, strikers that you were asked to support aren't in our system in the UAW. They're from Unifor in Canada, first of all. Secondly, even if they were from our union, $200 a week is about the strike pay. So that's not a lot of money. And there's a lot of people that fall through the cracks in such a strike. So we really need to act with solidarity when these things come up. And I hope that you now see the value of that. And we appreciate your email, but please understand that that's the reason. We want to help support our brothers and sisters, especially the auto workers from another country that we have a lot of affinity with. So, email 4, I was shocked to hear about the health care and even more shocked about the pensions. That's from Ohio. A lot of people don't know what's going on with the pensions, and it's sad. Even some of the benefit reps don't fully understand what's going on. So stay in touch and stay tuned. We cover this from time to time. Email number 5, keep up the great work. We all need this show. That was many emails from around the world said that, and we thank you for emailing those in, and we intend to keep going. So thanks to all of you email writers. Up next is this week's quote. With but few exceptions, it is always the underdog who wins through sheer willpower. That's Johnny Weissmuller's quote, and a little bit about him. While working as an elevator operator and a bellboy in an Illinois athletic club, Weissmuller caught the eye of swim coach William Bachrock, who began training him. Johnny Weissmuller went on to be a 5-time Olympic gold winner for swimming. Let's bring on our co-hosts, Jeff Brown and David Fillion. Bring David on first. Hi, David. How are you doing?
Pretty good, Leroy. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Been pretty busy around here this week, but, you know, it's always busy. So we're happy that we continue to stay busy with all of this that's going on and stay ahead of it for the most part. Jeff, are you there?
Yeah. Hi, guys.
Hi, brother.
Hey, guys. Hey, guys. How are you doing? I'm okay.
Jeff, if you don't mind, I'll turn this over to Jeff for a couple minutes. How about that? You got the ball, Jeff.
Okay, just let me know when you're back on, Leroy. Okay, we're starting off at Article 6 of the International Constitution. Like I said, you can find this at UAW.org. Just click on the link about, and it will show you the drop-down menu, and you can just click on Constitution. So number 6 concerns membership. This is a very long article, so we won't do it all tonight. We're going to break it up into sections. Section 1, the International Union shall be composed of all workers eligible for membership in the International Union, United Automobile, Aerospace, and Agricultural Implement Workers of America, UAW. Section 2, any person eligible to become a member of the international union who is not affiliated with any organization whose principles and philosophy are contrary to those of this international union as outlined in the preamble of the Constitution may apply for membership to the local union having jurisdiction over the workplace in which he or she is employed. The applicant must, at the time of application, be an actual worker in and around the workplace. All applicants for membership in any local union of the international union shall fill out an official application provided by the international union, answering all these questions contained in such application and signing a promise to abide by all laws, rules, regulations, and the Constitution of the international union.
Jeff, I think, is that a break there, Jeff? Is that a break in the in what you're reading? Because I'm
one
back.
More sentence.
Okay,
one
go
more
ahead.
Sentence here, Leroy.
Okay.
All applications must receive shall be referred to the local union for consideration and be acted upon as soon as possible, but not later than 60 days from the date the application is received by the financial secretary of the local union. Okay, Leroy. Bring on
okay.
A guest.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. Before I bring him on, I want to make a little statement here. We talked about this in our team call and privately between each other throughout the week, and we wanted to make a strong statement on behalf of our brothers and sisters in Unifor Local 88. To begin, Team Working for a Living fully supports Unifor Local Union 88 as they represent the best interest of their members. The parties should all take note that the notion of the UAW continuing to have a company ethos in which inhumane workloads, alternative work schedules, attacks on retiree health care and pensions, and as many as 6 wage tiers exist in the workplace are a thing of the past, and that a returning of our UAW to a labor ethos is fully underway. Having said that, in support of the two brothers that are coming on here in just a second, I'd like to introduce the leadership of Unifor Local 88. We're going to bring on President Don Borthwick and Bargaining Chair Mike Van Bokel. Please welcome them to Working for a Living, and we thank you, brothers, for coming on tonight. Hi, Mike and Dan.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hey. So we have David and Jeff. They're going to kind of sit in mute mode for the moment. And how about if I bring the president, Don, into the conversation first so that you might address the listeners with anything you want to discuss here, Don.
First of all, I'd just like we're honored to be a part of the show and to relate our story to people across the United States and Canada and around the world.
Thank you for being on. We are absolutely pleased to have you on our show this evening, and everybody has been talking about it pretty much most of the week. So do you have anything that you care to share about what's going on at the GM facility? Go ahead.
So we've been negotiating for the past month, really seriously for the past two or three weeks, and we had a deadline of September 17th, 10:59 p.m. Last Sunday. Unfortunately, we were unable to reach a tentative agreement for our members that addressed very important issues around job security, economics, and contract language in the plant. So as a result, our members have been on strike since last Sunday, and we're getting close to concluding our first week on the picket lines. The membership has been very positive and very supportive behind the bargaining committee. The community of Ingersoll and surrounding area has also been very supportive of our struggles, and also other workplaces, labor groups, affiliates, nurses, firefighters, teachers, other factories have all been coming out to the line and providing tremendous support to the members as we work through our struggles to achieve job security in our plant and address economic items and issues, and also contract language that affects how the shop floor functions.
Okay, that's a big job, isn't it? That's something you take lightly, is it, President?
Go ahead, Mike.
No, that's Mike here. I'm the plant chair and also the chair of the burning committee. No, it's not something we take light whatsoever. We have 2,800 members. We've got about 350 retirees, so we don't have a big retiree group. Our plant will be 30 years old next year, so we're in terms of longevity, we're not that long a plant. But we are three shifts. We've been working 6 days a week for 9 years, mandatory overtime, 24 hours a day. We're three shifts. And just for a bit of a history, our plant has been booming. We build for GM the Equinox and the Terrain. We've won every J.D. Power Award, the Quality Awards, 4 of the last 5 years. We've been awarded with the most efficient plant in North America as per the Harbor Standards, which is one of the Bibles of the industry. And then in January this year, they informed us that they're taking the Terrain and moving it to Mexico. It left on July 1st. It caused a job loss of 600 people. There was no reason for it other than, I'll say, pure corporate greed. They pay the Mexican workers, they tell us $3 an hour U.S., so it's not much above poverty. You could never do it here. We can't compete with that kind of wage, but our membership's done everything right. We've answered the call 6 days a week for 9 years, and our reward is they take our truck and move it out of the country and leave us with a big hole. And we're down to what was 600 jobs less with an Equinox that sells very well, but it leaves a lot of people wondering, what do you got to do to try and lock up product?
Correct. I happen to have purchased a 2017 Equinox, and I have to tell you, brothers, and all the members at your local, I have had about any type of car that Chevrolet, Oldsmobile builds over the years, and this is by far the best vehicle I've ever had. There's been faster, there's been prettier, but this is by far, and I actually wrote about that on my news feed here a while back, by far the best vehicle I've ever owned. So you folks are doing an amazing job of building this vehicle up there. So kudos to all of you. I know you can't share much about the goings on in the negotiations, and that's actually, I don't know if it's by Canadian law, but as you negotiate, it's not supposed to be public. I know you've been criticized by at least one news organization for not being open and forthright with the negotiating process, but those things are all set, as you know, back when the local resolutions for what the membership would like to have, and that drives what you do at the bargaining table. So I want to dispel the idea that your secrecy is something that you're trying to hide something, and want to stick up for you in your efforts to continue to negotiate for the membership's wishes in their interests. And would you say that's a fair assessment, brother?
Yeah. I would say it's 100% accurate. We do have meetings. We have a bargaining meeting where we go through all the proposals. They're voted on by the membership. They're fully supported. And then once the bargaining process, as anyone's been through it, they understand what you might have today. You might give up 2 days to get something even more important. So until it's all locked in, we do try and keep it tight. But I like to think our membership has our back 100%, so we have theirs 100%. We're bargaining absolutely things that were on the table that they passed. And we're trying to get the best possible contract that we obviously think we can get. If not, we could have brought back something last Sunday and have them vote on it, but we don't think it's the best contract out there. We don't think it's remotely the best, and we think taking this stand was the only alternative we had for our membership. It's the goal was never to go on strike, but the goal is to get the best contract possible, and we weren't that close last Sunday.
Thank you. I know you're working hard and likely working around the clock, not only trying to negotiate with the company, but also making sure that your leadership team and all of your members are to the degree that they can be appraised of what's going on and the status of the negotiations as they go.
Our bargaining committee, we're out on the picket lines daily at each of the gates, meeting with our members, sharing ideas, discussing where we are. And like I said before, and Mike said, the membership is 100% behind us. They know the issues. They've lived the issues for many years, and they understand that we need to have something fixed going forward so that not only the current members are protected, but we can establish a future for their children and maybe their grandchildren. So the membership understands and fully endorses the proposals that we passed and the ongoing bargaining process that we have in place.
Good. That's good to know. It's good hearing that from the both of you as well, because I know you're under some scrutiny here by at least one of the news media folk or organizations, I should say. So let put that to bed. We talk about some things on our radio show from time to time that you might be interested in knowing as you are in the negotiating process here. Just by way of information, let me bring two things to your attention. One is we've long held that you can't pair up two tier one countries with a third world country, essentially, and expect that there be some sort of parity within that. When this all happened back in 1993, December 8th, there were a lot of people that thought this was, a great thing, but yours truly and a number of people around us did not think so. And we hold today the idea that any products coming from Mexico have a surcharge placed on them, and that money then returned to Mexico so that they can raise their own standard. It might be something that you can think about or talk about with others, but if that's the problem is global agreement on tax and tariff, we're all signatories of that, and we cannot add a tariff, unlike our current president blustering about he wants to put a tariff on things. Because of GATT, it's simply impossible as long as we're a signatory of that. But we can put a surcharge on the product and send the surcharge back to the country of origin. That stops the dumping of products from these third world countries, not just Mexico, but China and Vietnam and any number of those third world countries that are sending product into our countries and just taking off the jobs and the money in our countries. The other issue that I'd like to bring to your attention is we have been made aware that there's something called a dead peasants insurance. That's where the most Fortune 500 companies buy life insurance at a very high premium on their retirees. And when the retirees pass away, that money in an insurance benefit is paid non-taxable into the executive suite pension fund. We found out that Mark Fields from Ford, we found this out in April. I spoke about it on the Capitol steps of the State of Michigan building on May 1st about how he had an $858 million pension fund, almost $1 billion. And that's money that should have gone to the stakeholders, stakeholders being the government, which if they had not siphoned it off as an expense, would have gotten a bite out of the apple. The shareholders, obviously us as employees and members, and then the communities in which these companies exist. Armed with that information, you may have a little more leverage against the company. Also, to understand that there's a change in the wind. They need to understand that the idea that they're going to have a company union or a union with a company ethos, that's just a thing of the past now. It just is. They need to understand that. So with those three things said and the reiteration that this is no longer a company union, but it's becoming a labor ethos union once again, I hope that can help you as you go forward in your negotiations with this company and other others that are watching. Other unions need to take this shift in the ethos of unionism in our country, in the United States at least. And that should support you better as you go forward in these negotiations. I would also like to note one other thing that was brought to our attention by another Canadian worker, I won't say her name just because it's probably not good to call her out, but she was very clear that when the Canadian negotiations go on, that typically leads the way in 88, and everybody else then benefits by whatever you're able to get for them. So as you go forward, we certainly want to give you the very best wishes from all of us here in the United States, because what you're doing there affects the rest of the Canadian locals, but it also is going to affect us and make it just that much easier to bring labor ethos back to our union here as well. So that's just a few things that I wanted to add to what you've already said. I hope that helps. Do you think that might help you, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. We do take a look at everything. I found that dead peasants insurance very interesting. I have not heard of that. I will definitely be looking into that. But, yeah, and I do agree with what you said, and with that, the sister, I don't know who it is, obviously, but that sister that called, that we are a standalone plant, so we always bargain after the big three historically in Canada 1 year later. That's the way we've been set up. So we do try and leapfrog them in certain areas, and then hopefully allows them the opportunity to leapfrog us. So we try and get to the table really twice every 4 years. And I do believe that the better you can do for your members can definitely expand and help out not only the locals in Canada, but hopefully the big picture in the United States as well.
Yeah, we hope that this starts making a turn, this great big ocean liner that we have that's been going the wrong direction for a long time, that this starts to turn the rudder of this ship and gets it going back their proper direction. So is there anything else that you gentlemen like to add? Is there anything that we have, you know, to cover yet that affects your members? Would you like to shout out to the folks? I don't know if you're getting any money from the folks here in the States yet or not, but if you want to give a shout out to them and send another request out there, I'll be reposting that early in the week again. I believe you saw that post on Facebook because I sent you the link. So,
yep.
Is there anything you'd like to say in addition?
Yep, we've seen it, we've said earlier, we appreciate all the support we've been getting from around the world, the States, actually even Mexico, the rest of Canada, the locals, unions in our area, the people in our area, and it's been tremendous amount of support from the entire community. As you're aware, the auto industry, when we do stuff, we're usually the ones that are the first ones to be beat on by the media and different sources. But this time around, I believe we've picked on a topic that nobody can defend, and that is job security. Providing job security not only for our workers here, but the supplier plants that supply our plant and the community in which we live, that we put money back into the community. So we've got a good argument and a top-notch issue with the job security. If we can't, our plant can't hold product and maintain it at high efficiencies, then no plant in this world we'll be able to do it, and we'll all be losing our jobs soon. So I just want to reiterate a big thank you to anyone and everyone that has supported our cause so far.
Thank thank you, brother, for recognizing everybody. And we hope to have even more support coming as we get more and more traction with the issue and how important this strike in Canada is to each and every auto worker in North America.
Yes.
Dan, Don, do you have anything else to add?
I just got to say that you just mentioned it's each and every auto worker in North America. This battle isn't amongst the auto workers. This battle is with corporations and so-called free trade agreements that are corporate trade agreements that exploit workers and are a tool for corporate greed. So just reiterate, this isn't about it is not a fight with workers. It's a fight with corporations and governments that have not looked after the people they represent for many years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes, I didn't mean to imply at all that it was about workers, but rather in their interest. Your strike is
in their interest.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. If I'll give you an opportunity to say anything you want, Don, beyond anything we've already talked about, and then I'll give Mike the same opportunity, and then I will wish you the very best. But go ahead, Don, anything at all.
Well, I'd just like to thank you guys for allowing us to bring our issue to the forefront through this medium, and we'll keep up the fight, and we appreciate the support. Thank you.
Well,
yeah, just this is Mike again. Just want everyone to know we got 2,800 members out there, and don't ever underestimate your membership. Keep them in the light. Let them know what's going on. Keep them educated and appraised of what's really going on, and they've got your back like you've never seen. And it makes it a lot easier to argue with the corporations on a small table when you got 2,800 standing behind you and you're just a voice. It makes it a lot easier. But thank you very much for having us on the show. It's greatly appreciated.
You're welcome. I'd be remiss if I didn't let – I know Jeff and David have some thoughts that they'd like to bring to the fore regarding your issue. So please stand by if you would. I'm a little remiss. I should have brought them in before I give you that last opportunity. You have another opportunity after them. But Jeff, you got any comments you'd like to make there, brother? Questions?
I just have a question. Does Canada still have the anti-strike replacement law under effect? Where they can't bring in staffs in the plant to do your work?
No, every province is different. In Ontario, we don't have any anti-scab legislation, so it is up to us as members to hold tight on the lines. And I'll have to say this time, the corporation has made a decision not to try to enter the plant, and so our picket lines at the four different gates have been very peaceful. And we've been able to stick to our main message of job security, economics, and contract language need to be addressed.
Yeah, that's good. I know here in Michigan late last year, Governor Snyder signed a bill in the law where workers who strike companies here in Michigan, we can't hold a picket line. If we do, one person's loan can be fined $10,000 a day, and the local community can be fined a lot more than that. This is in Michigan, Detroit, the automobile capital of the world, and it just amazes me that we have that rule here in Michigan. So that's all I have.
I was just going to say, we're not really concerned about fines and whether it's illegal or legal. If we need to do something, we usually do it first and worry about ramifications later. That's one of our things at Local 88.
Very good.
Hey.
Okay.
Thank you, Jeff, for that. David, do you have any questions or comments for the special guests?
They had spoke about the pension plan. Is that the defined plan for your workers?
I can answer that. We have a defined pension plan
for all of our workers up until our last contract, and they did put DC pensions right across the big three for everybody. So that started 4 years ago, but every new hire now in the auto industry is a DC pension, but all of the people ahead of that time remain with their DB until they retire.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Pensions are a big issue here in the United States. Our employees here were cut off from the pension plan in 2007. We're wondering in the future what these workers will do. Right now they're looking at lifetime sentences. So pensions are really huge. And I imagine they are there, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Having said that, I think, David, do you have anything else? Is that it?
That's pretty much it. Everything else was answered. I appreciate you guys coming on and filling us in. And I wish the best for you, and I hope that you do get a product there that sustains your plant and gives more people an opportunity to work in Canada.
Thank you.
Okay, fellas. Want to thank you for coming on behalf of your membership and reporting to the listeners of our show. And I hope, and we all hope, every last one of us, hope that you do well in the outcome of your negotiations and your ongoing strike. And as we can, we will assistance we're able. Also, if you want to come back on the show at any time, you know how the to reach us. Please just let us know, especially after you get a agreement. You want to come on and explain it as you would, obviously explain it to your own members first. But if you want to explain it to the rest of us, I'll be happy to have you back on. So, thanks for coming on, fellas. We really appreciate it, brothers, a lot.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much also. Bye.
Okay. Have a good night. I'll put you back in.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay, Dave and Jeff, they got their hands full up there in Canada. I'll tell you, they've lost a vehicle up there, and they're trying to maintain job security and implant work rules, improve those, and get some financial benefit out of all of this. So, we wish them the very best. We really do. So I want to thank them again, the two brothers. Those, again, Dan Borthwick, and that's president of Local Union Unifor, Local Union 88, and bargaining chair Mike Van Bokel. We really appreciate them coming on tonight. So much appreciated, brothers. Okay, Jeff, if you want to start back in, unless you guys got any more comments on that, Jeff, you have any more?
They definitely have their hands full, Leroy. I know there's a trying to end the right to work rules in the United States, part of the renegotiating of NAFTA. That puts Canada at a very disadvantage because we have so many states here with right to work, especially here in Michigan. So they do have their hands full.
Yeah, did you, David, do you have any comments, just generally?
Yeah. Here in the United States, the two-tier wage system puts a terrible burden on us and also the workers in Canada. That also creates an unlevel playing field for those workers as well as us. And I hope the Canadian government and Unifor will continue to stand their ground in regards to our right to work laws. We need to do away with that here, and as well as the two-tier wage schedules. After negotiations in 2015, Dennis Williams he had promised to address the issue of two-tier wages. And his first order of business with Cindy Estrada was to go down to Hammond, Indiana, and negotiate another bad agreement that put 40% of their workers at risk and 60% of them at advantage. Although the 40% can ascend to in progression program, we don't really know how many ever did or ever will. And now we have unlimited amounts of temporary workers. And that all needs to end.
So yes, it does. Yes, it does need to end. And, you know, we feel largely that this whole dead peasants insurance has contributed to the greed of the corporations, and the government needs to get its nose into this as well, because they're not getting a tax bite out of a lot of money. When you turn CEO like Mark Fields of Ford into $858 million, that's nearly $1 billion in his pension fund. He'd have to work, I think it was 34.2 years, pay every penny into his pension plan and never pay a penny of tax in order to get that much money. And he was making $22.1 million. He'd have to do that for 38 years, a little over 34 years, a little over 34 years, in order to get that much money. This is unconscionable. And for those that might be wondering what happened to him, 3 weeks, 21 days to the day that we spoke about that on the Capitol steps of the Michigan Capitol, Mark Fields was fired by Ford. We don't know the exact reason why, but this is a big thing to come public. And believe me, he's not the only one out there with these sort of retirement benefits. And if you look back from 2000 and watch the stock price go to nothing of General Motors and wonder why it did that, you might have the answer in what we just discussed. So they got to stop being so greedy and give a little bit around to the rest of the community. I posted on this page that you're all, most of you are watching or listening to the show on. There's a chart of velocity of money on that page. The chart since about 2000 has gone at about a 45 degree angle straight down. And that's in the United States, and it's also in the face of some $8 trillion of quantitative easing being infused into the economy to mask the job loss that was going on since 2000. And you all know who was president in 2000. Okay, so, and it's just continued on. The corporations have just got that much greed. Now they want, the Fed wants to sell a lot of what they bought. So there's $4.5 trillion that's still in their inventory. They want to sell it. That's going to take more velocity of money and have that go down even further. And it'll take money out of the system, so the velocity of money will go down even further. So this is not a pretty picture. And we need to be strong negotiators as we go forward against these corporations and the greed that they've had. But they have got to get up off of some of this money and start putting it into the system, or they're not going to have a marketplace to sell their vehicles. It's that simple. And they just need to start doing that like yesterday. But I'm sure they don't get it yet. But if you look at that chart that's on the page for this radio show on our website, just look down, scroll down a little bit, and you'll see that chart. It is not a pretty chart. And that's in the face of $8 trillion being infused into our economy here. So just be aware of that, everyone. So having said that, okay, Jeff, if you want to go ahead and do about the first half of Article 6, and we'll try and wrap it up around 8 o'clock, if that's all right with you. Well, you'll with the special guests this evening, David and I won't have a full report. We'll just go with Jeff's series number 4 on the UAW Constitution. Jeff, you want to take it away?
Sure. We just read Article 2, Article 6, Section 2A. I want to make a statement on this. There's one sentence in here that says, the member who wishes to request to join the UAW must promise to abide by all laws, rules, and regulations and of the Constitution of the International. My opinion is that we have a lot of people in leadership who are failing to follow the rules and regulations in our Constitution. It's not hard to see. You do it out in the open. And in my local, I crack them every time they try to go outside the Constitution or our local bylaws. We are still having problems with our elections. So, okay. Let me go down to Section 2B. Notwithstanding any other provisions in this Constitution, applicants working for unorganized employers or in those units not yet under the jurisdiction of a UAW local union may become members of the international union directly by signing an application for membership in a form approved by the International Executive Board and by the payment of a sum of $1 or such other amount determined by the International Executive Board toward initiation fees and dues. Once a local union is chartered in or awarded jurisdiction over the unit in which such member is working, he, she shall be automatically become members of that local union. Section 3, notwithstanding any other provisions of this Constitution, whenever an international officer or international representative is a member of the local union which is disbanded or goes out of existence or those charters is revoked, said officer or international representative may apply for membership in another local union in the same region. If accepted as a member, a membership action in such local union, the international officer or international representative shall be considered to have remained in continuous good standing in the international union during a period between the cessation of the existence of his or her original local union and his or her acceptance by the leadership of the new local union. Section 4. Upon acceptance of the application, membership shall date from the first day of the month for which dues are paid or dues checkoff is authorized. Section 5. Applications for membership rejected by the local union shall not be reconsidered until 30 days after have elapsed. Section 6. Unless waived by the local union or unit of the unaffiliated local, any candidate failing to represent him or herself for initiation within 4 weeks after notification of his or her acceptance to membership without good and specific reason being given shall forfeit all the money paid by him or her. Section 7. The original application signed by each member shall be retained electronically, and this is new language, by the local union for its record. Electronic record of that official receipt shall be retained by the local union information system. This electronic record shall be made available to the international union. A receipt shall be given to the member in an electronic record of receipt retained by the local union. Number 8. No new member will be recorded at the international office, nor will initiation fee or per capita tax be accepted for new members until a monthly report is received from the financial secretary of the local union and a new member information has been entered into the local union information system. You can stop me anytime, guys. Section 9, any local union or international union trial committee expelling any member for cause shall notify the international secretary treasurer and later shall notify all local unions of this fact or within. A person who has been suspended or expelled by any local union international union trial committee should not be eligible for membership in any other local union until all claims and charges against such person has been satisfactorily settled with the local union or international trial committee. Suspending or expelling the written notice to this effect furnished by the local union to which such person seeks admission. Section 10. No member shall be allowed to hold membership in more than one local union of the international union at the same time, except by permission of the International Executive Board. No member of the union who is fully employed in one workplace under the jurisdiction of the UAWSL shall accept work in any other workplace under the jurisdiction of the UAW. Any member violating this section may be subject to charge of conduct on becoming a member. The above shall not apply in cases of members of a local union or union of amalgamated local union who are conducting an authorized strike and have received written approval from the local union officers to obtain employment elsewhere.
Okay, Jeff, that's the first 10 sections of Article 6. That's about half. If you'd like to take a little break there and finish this last 10 out next week, and then maybe even, let's see how long, 7's pretty short, maybe try and do 7, the last second half of 6 and 7 next week, if that'd be all right with you.
That'd be fine with me.
Okay, that'd be good. I think that's good for the listeners as well. It gets pretty tedious. This is, constitutional language, and it has a lot of nuances in it. And the slightest little thing can impact another portion of the Constitution and have an unintended consequence. So when you write these resolutions, you must be very, very careful. We recently saw a resolution someone wrote that literally would decimate about 40% of the entire UAW if it was implemented. And everybody's touting it as some great document. Be careful. Be careful when you start writing things and you don't fully understand the unintended consequences. You really have to understand the entire Constitution. That's why we're going through this, so that everybody understands it. Even though you have a basic knowledge of it, you still may not understand all the nuances that can be related to other articles. So you must be very careful when you write these. And it needs to be vetted by, people that understand the Constitution beyond just the rhetoric that's being sent out there by some people at the moment. So this is serious stuff, and it affects all of us, and we can't do things that destroy 40% of our union. So just a word to the wise for how resolutions need to be handled. Jeff, did you see anything yourself that might need attention as being changed in the first half of Article 6? Did you see anything?
Just the change is the electronic record of the official receipt being retained by the local union member.
Right. That's a change that came in the last Concon, but is there anything that you see now that should be addressed as a change in the 2018 convention?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
In Article 6.
They must abide by all laws, rules, and regulations of the Constitution of the International Union. We have seen time and time again where local, international leadership has violated these. That needs to be strictly enforced at all levels.
But does it need to be changed? You're happy with the way it's written now, and it just needs to be enforced is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, I'm happy with the way it's written. They just need to be enforced a hell of a lot better.
I got it. And I believe our leadership team, we've been in a number of behind-the-scenes efforts regarding the enforcement of proper laws, and et cetera. And, of course, most of the people are familiar with your very public issue, but there's been a couple others as well that aren't quite as public. So that it truly does need to be administered in a better way. And I can tell you there's a few people right now that really need to take heed of this first half of Article 6. So having said that, David, do you have anything in the first half of Article 6 do you think needs to be changed?
No, I'm in agreement with Jeff. He pretty much covered what I had on my mind in regards to it.
Okay. So that's an important issue, and I believe the team, we've discussed this a number of times, not just a couple, about the proper enforcement of the Constitution as it is written, and it's just simply not being done in many cases, and then being glazed over and then rubber stamped by academics that should know better, and we won't go any further than that. Of course, we've called them out by name in the past. So, but having said that, I want to invite anybody that has an interest in any portion of the Constitution that you believe needs to be changed. But we're going to focus on the second half of Article 6 and Article 7 for next week. So if you have any idea that you have something that might be subject to change, please email us at workingforaliving@workingforaliving with your thoughts. We're all available on Facebook, and you may contact, obviously Jeff or David or myself and those around you that are in leadership that you know. Just because we don't out them publicly doesn't mean that you don't know that they're out there privately in your plant. Or your work facility, better said. If you know of anybody and you have anything you'd like to see changed or addressed in any way in the second half of Article 6 and Article 7 going forward, and then we'll, as we get into the rest of the Constitution, we'll call for suggestions, but also we will let you know if we have some suggestions on the balance of the Constitution in advance. We'll tell you whether we think there's some things that need to be changed, and we have written those up. But you're obviously welcome to contact us with any of those and with any other questions you might have. Some of you ask us to keep those private, and we do, but we do address them in our own way, mostly to the positive end. So thank you for participating. Those of you, you know who you are. Having said that, let's start to wind the show up because it is 7:59. We said we'd try and keep it to 8 o'clock. So, Jeff, do you have anything to say in addition to what's gone on tonight? Or any comment on anything? Go ahead.
Not off the top of my head, but I'll probably think of it tomorrow.
Okay. Well, you might want to, consider thanking the guys when they, the brothers from Canada.
Yeah, they did a good job. I appreciate them taking time and coming up telling us their story. And,
They did a nice job.
We support them.
Yeah,
we support them 100%.
Yeah. Okay. David, do you have anything at all?
Yeah. I know we don't like to talk about politics a lot on this show. From time to time we do. In the announcements you spoke about, Peter Robb, he has been nominated by President number 45 to take the position that he's been nominated for. Should he be confirmed? The spell is going to cause damage. This is a 4-year term. It's going to cause some damage to some folks. And I know there's a lot of folks out there who voted for Republicans because emails were more important. And those emails are going to seem so very far distance in importance when this fella gets done with 4 years in office, should he actually be confirmed. We really need to consider what we do when we walk into the polls and vote against our own interests. That's all I have to say, Lyra.
Okay, thank you, David. I echo that. You hit it right on the head. When we vote certain ways, there are people out there that are known to be against us, and we need to consider that. Our enemies are out there, and they're vicious in every way. I went to a meeting a little over a year ago where they attempted to take the microphone right out of my hand. It was full of people with $2,500 suits. I'm telling you, we got real enemies out there. And I'm pretty formidable. They didn't take no microphone out of my hand or somebody that had a broken arm. Literally. But they're out there. And they were there that day in mass. And it was supposed to be a bipartisan effort. Anytime somebody spoke up for the working class, they tried to rip the microphone out of my hand. And that's witnessed by an AFL union brother that I have a great deal of respect for. And he'll verify that anytime you want to ask him. So, they're out there. As Jeff did, I would like to take a second to thank the leadership of local union 88 from Unifor for coming on the show this evening. We're honored to have President Don Borthwick and Bargaining Chair Mike Van Bokel on our show this evening. Again, we want to extend an invitation to them. Come back anytime they want to, especially if they get a tentative agreement after they've notified their members and they care to share their successes with the listeners of this show. So we are doing real cool stuff here for you listeners, and we hope you appreciate it. And tell just one other person if you found value in this show this evening. Tell just one other. Okay. I want to thank all the listeners around the world for listening in. Thanks to our brothers and sisters in Canada, those on strike there especially. Our brothers and sisters in the auto industry in Mexico, all of our sisters and brothers across the United States in local unions from California to Maine, from Florida to Montana, as they say. We'd like to wish you have a safe week upcoming. And we will see you again October 1st. That's a week from tonight. And hopefully you'll have some input on our guests this evening that you want to email in. Again, our email address is workingforliving@workingforliving. So I will say goodnight to David and Jeff, and goodnight to listeners. Goodnight. Good night, everybody.